You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It'll be kind of like being a pilot. You'll come out of college and you want a cyber guarantee. We'll give you a cyber guarantee.
Great.
And then if you make it through the school, then you'll get qualified and that's what you'll go do. If you don't, then we'll
room in the grunt.
Make you an infantry officer.
Worked okay for you and
worked
me.
Out for so. You. Of course, everyone knows that the most intelligent, handsome people on the earth are infantry officers.
As this would convey.
Exhibit A and B.
That's right.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. Then you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess they can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. But wanting my cake and eat it too. And wanting it both ways. Fame made me a balloon. Cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep.
All right. I've been looking forward to this since Saturday when we met. But joining me now is Ron Reyes. He is a Gold Star son, a Marine Corps type. Father was killed in action in Vietnam. And Ron, first of all, good morning. Welcome to All Marine Radio.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No. Look, we were introduced by Ken Rogers. And he looked at me and goes, hey, you need to meet somebody. So he introduced me to Ron. And so, Ron, we have to introduce you to everybody. And first of all, born and raised where?
Born and raised in Orange County, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, God's country out here.
Yeah.
as long as you got the money for it. All right. So so your connection to this tribe is your father was killed in action in Vietnam at Khe Sanh in 1968. Yes.
Correct. March 30th, 1968, on a hill called the Rock Quarry, just outside the wire at Khe Sanh Air Base.
Okay. All right. So you grow up. You grew up in Orange County. And where do you go to high school? Where do you go to college? Or do you?
that all sounds simple. Like that's how it should go. But I grew up here in Orange County. My mom's a single mom. She didn't get married till I was 15. She had me at 17. And boy, that could go all sorts of wrong, right?
Right.
I mean, think about that. The odds are really stacked, but my mom doesn't look at it that way. My mom never asks for help. She works her ass off. She gets into computers, gets into a whole field that way. And so I grew up here in Orange County. It's funny because my kids talk about it. And they said, man, yeah, Daddy had such a great childhood. I'm like, well, it started really shitty, but, you know, it ended really well. But yeah, so I grew up here in Orange County as a kid, and then my mom got married, and I moved up to Ventura County, and I graduated from high school up in Ventura County, and I just moved back to Orange County less than a year ago.
All right. Did you go to college? Where does life take you as you leave Ventura High School or wherever?
Yeah, well,
or wherever the hell you went.
Newbury Park High School, actually. Well, college was probably the worst 90 days of my life. You know, I tried it out for a little while, but no, in hindsight, I did go back. I went for a couple years, but I never really continued on. I was poised to go to Pepperdine at one point. And in my vast wisdom, I figured I was already making enough money and I shouldn't do that, which, you know, hindsight's 20/20 at 50 years old.
There is some logic to that argument, though, okay? There is some logic to that.
Well, logic doesn't always...
No.
You know, the way I pursue things over life, but right.
So what do you do? Where does life take you? What do you do as you get out of high school?
Well, I did sales. I've been selling since I was 13 years old. So that kind of takes you all sorts of places, all sorts of careers.
Exactly.
But really, kind of. In the mid-90s, drops me into finances and banking, and I become a stockbroker. It's one of the first ever in the bank system because it was unheard of at the time.
We didn't do that.
I floated around always in that the last 10 years plus in real estate and mortgages. And there was a little side shoot where I did motorsports marketing. I was involved in drag racing, IndyCar, NASCAR, some other things like that that were fun. And it was actually working for a manufacturer, and that was just a side thing we did, so it was kind of cool.
Wow.
So I've been all over the place.
All right. What do you do now?
I work in the real estate division at the largest reverse mortgage company in the country, American Advisors Group.
Reverse mortgages a good thing?
Yeah, they are. I think they're a great financial planning tool, great retirement tool. But quite frankly, you know, I run into people that are just they're at their end of their rope. And it's interesting because I deal with a lot of Vietnam vets every single day. So, you know, we take a little bit of care, but their only option is either to sell or do a reverse mortgage. So, you know, you want to keep them in their home as long as they can.
Right, right. The talk to us about growing up as a Gold Star kid. What is your first recollection of that you were different from the other kids and that your dad was killed in a war? How did your mom handle all that? Tell us about growing up and going down that road that very, very few of us, if not none of us, have gone down.
Well, I got to say Father's Day sucked at kindergarten when everybody's making Father's Day cards. And that's probably the real first thing is when you realize, oh, man, this is really different. And I'm sorry, I'll go back I take this very serious, but there's, you know, there's some humor to, you know, to life in general. You know, how are you going to deal with things?
So let me ask you this. So what did you do? Everybody's making a card for Father's Day. What did you do?
You make a card for Father's Day.
So you did. You would make a card for your father?
I give it to my mom.
Okay. All right. No, so, I just, you know, what do you do?
Yeah. Well, my story is so long and varied, so I kind of give you – I could get to where we are today because I think that's probably the most important is the outreach and what comes back from that. But growing up as a kid, you know, as a little kid, I can remember looking at what Vietnam was. What is it? I have no clue. And when I'm looking at it, I don't even realize the war is still going on. It's 75, and I think it's a long, you know, it's long ago, you know, done long ago.
Right.
So I spent my whole school, you know, time, every time I did a report, whatever it is, in elementary school, junior high school, and even into college when I started, anytime I did a report and I had to go to the library, because that's what we did back then, we didn't have the internet, I pulled out a book on Vietnam, whatever it was. I watched every documentary. I read every book I possibly could. I still didn't understand it. And I don't think I understood until very recently. And, but I never told anybody about it. We didn't talk about it. You know, like what you said, you know, what did you do when you made the Father's Day card? I didn't say anything. I just made the card. We just didn't talk about it. We didn't talk about Vietnam. We didn't talk about anything. And my mom was a very young mom. My mom didn't get the benefits. My mom didn't get the insurance. My mom didn't get the flag. My mom was unmarried, although engaged to my father. She was 17 years old, and she had the wherewithal at that age to stand back and let my grandmother be the Gold Star mother she was at 37, and my grandfather to be the Gold Star father. And, it could have all went bad, but my mom made sure that I had a relationship with them, and I saw them once a month for my entire life. So,
wow.
You know, we speed through life, and, you know, there's ups and downs and everything else, and my mom's always been a constant. I mean, just a constant. She's just always been that rock, but not realizing my mom's in her 20s,
right,
as we're growing up in the 70s. She's a young kid.
Right.
But there's another facet to this story, too, is my mom had a boyfriend that knew my father, and he was also a Vietnam vet. He was in 70, 71, actually probably 70. And he grew up like my dad. I mean, that was my go-to. He took me in. He treated me like his son. He was big into scuba diving, hang gliding. He was going to be a commercial diver, diving off of oil platforms, which was unheard of. And all of a sudden, 1975 hits, and he is killed in a diving accident in college. So now we've suffered loss twice in a short period of time. You know, and it shapes our lives and just how we deal with things. So, and cut me off, you know, if I go on a tangent, because I'll do
This is All Marine Radio, man. We, like, we've gone down these roads before. This is, I mean, as you and I were talking, I mean, this is home for you and your mom, and this is where our tribe hangs out. Like I told you, you can check out anytime you want. You're never leaving, though.
No doubt.
The, So take your time. I mean, so.
Okay.
Because, in fact, honestly, I'd love to have your mom on. And,
She's incredible.
I'd love to have your mom to talk about how did she get through it? You know, how do you make that work? So, my thought was that she was a widow at 17. Well, she's unmarried. So she's, has a child, but she's not even recognized.
Not even.
Wow.
And guess what? And there's no support programs for us.
Right.
So, what happens today with Gold Star families is so different than what we have.
Right.
And, you know, and there's a moment I spent with my mom recently with Gold Star families that kind of stuck out. But back to kind of – and my mom would be a great story, by the way. I'd like to hear her say some of that, too, because I haven't heard all of that. We haven't really – still haven't really probably talked about it.
Right.
We just kind of move on. So, anyway, I go through my whole life doing that, researching, right? Watching every documentary, everything you could do, which was hard to do at the time.
Right.
And then I meet her in 86, and we date for several years. We're married in 92. And in 1995, my daughter's going to be born. And I have two kids now. So in 1995, about 2 days before my daughter's born, my mom comes to me and says, I had a dream about your dad. Now, the thing about my mom is she's always had dreams about my dad when he was 19, because that's how old he was.
Right.
And in this dream, my dad was, he probably would have been in his 40s. And my mom saw him as that, and they had a quick response, and she basically just said, Ronnie's going to be fine. He's going to be a father. He's going to have a daughter. And that's the last time she ever had a dream about my father.
Wow.
And it was kind of at peace. And actually, I take that back. She didn't tell me before my daughter was born. We had this conversation after. Because all of that angst of who's my dad. You know what? Who was he in Vietnam? I have no clue. I got a pretty good idea who he was here. You know, I got great family that's filled me in. But who was he there? I want to know the Marine. I want to know what happens to you. And I don't think I'm ever going to find that out. So I thought. And then the second my daughter's born, so back to 95, I mean, the second she was born, this overwhelming peace came over me. And I was completely at peace that I would never find out, and I didn't need to find out, and I was done researching because my only goal in life now and my priority is I'm a father. And how can I be a great father if I'm here stuck on looking for my father? And we'll talk about that too, because I see that's something that happens along Gold Star families. Guess what? We're not all adjusted either. We all have issues. We've dealt a hard deck of cards here.
Right.
And it's,
I laugh because
look,
this is a tribe with issues, man. If you want to hang out with people that don't have issues, you might want to pass us by. But if you want to go to a pretty exciting party, go party with people that have issues. It's nothing but excitement, man. It's a three ring circus, so it'll be a good time no matter what. But
well, and that's we'll get back to that too. I mean, finding for me the Marine Corps League and really just at first it was Vietnam veterans and now it's all Marines. Just this shit, we get to say stuff that we don't talk about anywhere else. It's the greatest therapy, and it's I can't even explain it. So back to my daughter. So my daughter was born, and so at that moment I'm at peace.
Right.
I never need to know anything again, and I've gone on with my life, and things are great. And in 1998, my son's about to be born, who I'm going to name Ronnie. I already know.
Right.
I'm going to name him after my dad. So I don't need to know anything. I don't know who my father is really as much as I'd like to. And somebody goes to Washington, D.C., and they come back, and they bring me a rubbing from the wall, which I'd never been to. And I look at it, and I open my desk drawer at the time, and I got like 15 of them because that's what everybody does.
Right.
They would just go to the wall. They would look for a name. They, you know, my mom's friends and family and so many people knew our story that they would just send me this. You know, that was their attachment. But this time was different. So I looked at this thing, and I did what I used to do. So I'm like, I'm going to do some research. So I pulled out a notepad where I wrote that I went to my dad's head's gravesite here in Montebello, California, you know, a year earlier. I wrote down everything, which I didn't know what any of it meant. I wrote D Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, 3rd Marine Division. I have zero clue what that means at the time. But what an honor to be attached to that unit. So I go home and I, you know, I'm doing research and I got this, you know, nice computer at the time. They were expensive. The internet, no one knew what it was. And I found this website called the Quezon Survivors Page, which is now the Quezon Veterans Association or whatever. But there was email addresses, very few, as you can imagine, back then in 1998. And, you know, I didn't even know what to do with the computer. I didn't know how to use it for good at the time. And so I sent out an email to 11 email addresses from the 1st Battalion 9th Marines. And that was on a Thursday. And I just sat there, and nothing on a Friday, nothing Saturday, nothing Sunday, nothing Monday. I'm all, this isn't going to work. Forget it. I just, you know, I gave it a shot. Tuesday, I get a call. And so I was just Ronnie Reyes. I'm like, yeah, it's Ronnie Reyes. You know, I knew your dad. Wow. Now I'm just kind of blown away. And I sit there in awe for a minute. I didn't only know your dad, I was with your dad when he was killed. And so he starts telling me this story, and he's I was injured that day. I didn't know your dad was killed that day, because in war, when you're hit, you're lucky to survive and go to the rear. You don't know what happened to anybody who was with you. So this guy spends years in hospitals, and then he's recovered, although he's lost part of his arm, shrapnel everywhere. And he figured out that my dad was killed when he went to the wall in 1992 and was looking for somebody else who saw who was killed that day, and sees my dad's name and realizes, holy crap, this is big. And so he was on this mission to try and find me, and never does. Searches and searches. And so, he tells me the story, and he says, the story, and I kind of like touched on it with you a little bit. It was a bad day. We had just had our first beer that we had in months. It was warm, and I split it with tea. Tommy Wallace is tea. That's what he went by. So Pete Mestis is the guy I'm talking to. And he tells me, he's all, we weren't in Quezon, and I'm thinking, what is this guy talking about? I know you were in Quezon. And then he explains to me that, oh, no, we are early warning system. We are on a hill outside of Quezon, that if we're overrun, that was the first warning that Quezon was going to be overrun. He's all, we are hit every night, every single night. So anyway, Tommy, it's work party, and Tommy sent up to go pick up an ammo can. And he says, no way, I'm not going. He's all, he's ordered, go do it. He's like, whatever. So he goes and gets the ammo can, takes a direct rocket hit to the ammo can. It explodes. Pete Mestis runs up, and he goes and grabs T, and mortars are splashing down left and right as Pete explains it to me. And he grabs T, throws him on his shoulder, fireman's carry, knocked down by the concussion, grabs him again, this time kind of holding him, knocked down again. And basically, by the time he gets to the trench line, he's grabbing T by the boot, and he doesn't even know if T's alive. first person at the end of the trench line is my dad run up and throw tea on a stretcher. And as they grab him, they take a few steps, and they take a direct mortar hit. And the last thing Pete remembers is that somebody is falling back onto him as he blacks out. And we can only assume. I mean, that's my dad at that point. And I'm in awe at this time. I don't even know what to do. And so I kind of let that sit. I don't tell my grandparents anything because I don't even know what to tell them. What do you tell them, you know, about their son? I don't know yet. But I call my mom. As you can tell, you know, I have a close relationship with my mom. And I explain it to her. It's a good thing my mom's also been involved in social work and therapy for years and years because it was useful. But so I let that sit. Then I get another call. He's on, my name is Eddie Arcianega. They call me Archie. I was in Camp Pendleton with your dad, and I was in Vietnam with your dad. I'm all, wow, this guy's bridging the gap. This guy knows him before and during. And what I'll tell you about Pete, go back to Pete, is Pete said my dad was a Marine's Marine. He was the first one up for the fight. He always looked out for everyone around him. You know, he didn't want to fight, but he would fight. And he took everything serious. And he was also the biggest joker in, you know, around. Huge smile. And he made everybody laugh, you know, in the worst times. So I talked to Archie, and he's telling me the same thing. And the cool part is my grandparents used to come down to Pendleton, throw everybody in the car, and take them all back to La Puente Hacienda Heights, is which my dad was from. And they would, you know, barbecues, and then get them all back, you know, before leave was over. And so Archie had that whole connection, and I thought that was the coolest thing. Then I spoke to another guy, Bill Castle, and he watched it all unfold as he didn't actually see the direct hit, but he saw before and after that. And he described my dad as a Marine's Marine. Now, this is the story that I kind of think is really cool and serious. So my dad went in July of 1967, about 3 days after Operation Buffalo, which is where Delta was ambushed. Actually, I take that back. I'm not sure which company was ambushed, but part of the 19 was ambushed at the DMZ. And so my dad's coming in right after this huge thing. So he's pretty green coming in. But immediately after that, now he's in Kantian, now he's in Cam Lo, now he's up at the DMZ. Now he's gone through all these major battles. And when Bill Castle comes in January, he says, I really looked up to your dad. Now remember, my dad's 18 years old at this point. So I looked up to your dad. He was a Marine's Marine. He was really smart, well-trusted. And he didn't want to go work with me on patrol because he says I was too green. And he's all, here is this. And then my dad was maybe 5'5". I'm taller. He's all, now here's this guy. Now I'm painting this picture, right? This 18-year-old 5'5", really thin Mexican kid. And Bill's assessment was he was a grizzled born Marine at that point. He'd been a combat veteran already at that point, and he'd only been there since July. I mean, that tells you the amount of fighting these guys did and this unit did. In fact, there's 749 names on the wall from this unit. You know, The Walking Dead is just an amazing story. So that stuck out in my mind. And then the last call I got, it's a call I had no clue was coming. And I answer the phone, and now I'm getting used to this, right?
Right.
I still haven't talked to my grandparents, and I get the call. He's all, it's Ronnie Reyes. I'm like, that's Ronnie. Call me Ron. He's all, this is T. Actually, he's all, this is Tommy Wallace. They used to call me T. And it was at that moment that I realized that T made it. Up until this point, I thought T was dead. And that changed everything. It gave purpose. it gave a meaning, and it had nothing to do with the Vietnam War. It had to do with a Marine warrior that would go out and bring back his friend, because that's what you do. And he went on and married, had children, has grandchildren. He lives in Phoenix, Arizona today. He's like an uncle to me. Has his Pete, has his Bill, has his Archie. And that gave me some peace. And I thought that was it. And you'll see this reoccurring theme. And again, if I go off on tangent, just, you know, no. That'd be a question. But
no, let me tell you, your story is one that we don't get a. I've never done an interview with a Gold Star kid before, you know. And so I can, you know, you're talking about the battles of that 1-9 has fought. The Marine Corps hasn't fought like that since then. You know, what we've done in Desert Storm, we haven't fought an enemy that would fight us like the NVA fought us in 1966, 67, 68, 69, up near the DMZ. But you know, they got their, you know, the NVA got their asses kicked in 1968. But leading up to that, when your dad was in Delta Company 1-9, that was some of the most, that was some of the hardest fighting the Marine Corps has done, you know, since World War II. I would tell you that it is probably the most difficult fight the Marine Corps has done, World War II, to include today. And so, no, so, but I've never heard the perspective of a Gold Star kid. So, yeah, so, and again, my guess, just to reset this, if you're just joining us, my guess this morning is the son of, your dad was a PFC when he was killed, right?
He was.
The son of PFC Ronald Reyes. He's a 0311 infantryman with Delta Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, and are you Ron Reyes Jr.?
It's funny, I'm not, because my mom gave me a slightly different middle name, and then I gave my son a different middle name, so we're...
Nobody's junior. No juniors in here.
Right.
All right.
It's kind of, I don't know, it's one of those, my mom had some amazing insight and just the way she thought of things, and I don't think she realized she did it, but...
Now, do you go by Ron or Ronnie?
I went by Ronnie as a kid. In the high school, I changed my name to Ron, and for some reason, in the last couple of years, Ronnie has come back, and mostly from the Marines. So,
all right,
I go by everything.
All right, Ronnie Reyes, and he's a Gold Star son, and we're talking about his journey of discovery, and as he tells it to you, it's going to kind of come full circle where he's doing very, very cool things to help other Gold Star sons and daughters to find the family that he's found, the tribe that he's found, and help, you know, get through life that is inherently unfair. Because we as the people who sign up, we choose it. Ronnie didn't choose it. So continue with your story. So this last phone call you get, what happens in the phone call?
Yeah, so T and I talk, and, you know, I'm in awe of this whole thing. And you got to realize, I mean, as I've realized, Vietnam vets are very similar to this. Us as kids are kind of similar. We live on this island on our own, and we don't talk to anybody. Right, it's our reality of what it is, and it's brutal, and it's brutal to live on that island. Because who do you talk to? Because I can tell you what, my mom doesn't know my experience, and I don't know her experience, so we don't talk about it. We're dealing with our own stuff, and so now I just realize there's a whole other side to this, and the side that I didn't realize was survivor's guilt, and what these guys felt, and how guilty he feels for surviving. And I don't know how to deal with that. So Tommy and, you know, I kind of let it all sit, and I finally tell my grandparents, and I tell them everything I know. And they're happy. They're sad, but they're happy. So now let's speed along about 6 months later. And T gives me a call and says, Ronnie, why don't you come out to Phoenix, Arizona, and then we're going to go to my house in Mexico. He had a vacation house. Like, and we're, don't think vacation house. This guy bought, this guy's blonde hair, blue eyes, could speak Spanish, and lives in the neighborhood in Mexico in a normal village. So that's, so I look at my wife at the time and I say, well, I'm going to go to Mexico. My phone's not going to work. The pager's not going to work. I'll be back in like a week and a half. And she just looks at me. She's like, okay. How will I get you? I don't know. She's all, you don't know these guys. I'm all, my dad was with them. How can I not trust them? I trust them with my life, and I haven't even met them yet. So I jump in a plane, and I head over to Phoenix, and I don't know what anybody looks like. And when they explain their injuries, I expect them all in wheelchairs. Right. Tommy greets me, and blue eyes, blonde hair. Well, it's gray at this point. And, you know, missing a finger, missing a couple of fingers, and walking around. And what he doesn't tell, you know, what we've decided to do is we're going to surprise Pete. Pete doesn't even know I'm coming. What Tommy told him is that, hey, we're going to go meet Ronnie in California after this. And so Pete's mind is mentally a right. mess thinking about meeting me.
Right.
So we all meet at the airport. He introduces me as somebody totally different. We get in the car and we're shooting the shit for 2-3 hours. And we stop, and Tommy says, hey, let's take a picture. It's all right. Let's take a picture, and he's all, hey, whatever my name was at the time. So why don't you give me your business card? I'm like, okay, here's my business card. And Pete looks at it and just turns around and smiles. Tommy's all, look at the business card. Pete looks at the business card, reads it, looks up at me, looks at the card, looks at me, and then just completely collapses into my arms, and, you know, he's a mess. I'm a mess. He's a mess.
And nobody said shit yet, right?
No one said anything. What do you need to, there's nothing to say.
Right.
It's, you don't say anything, but we said everything in a minute, in 30 seconds. And this is the first time that, you know, I've experienced that. And it's funny, I've experienced it so many times now, and it's so hard to explain.
Not to us.
But,
it,
you know, but no, it's not to you. I mean,
yeah, we get it.
Right. You're going to run into one of your guys, one of your tribe members that you were with, you served with, that you guys are going to give a look or a remark or anything that's so nonverbal that
right.
you know everything.
Right.
You even know what you guys have been up to for the last several years without talking, just by a simple response.
Right.
And I've grown to observe this over time now amongst everybody. So anyway, so that week happens, and I'm going to speed along because the story, it just keeps unfolding. I mean, up until today. So we get in the car, we go down to Mexico, we spend a week in Mexico. We are, now I'm hearing all the stories, everything. The good, the bad, the stuff that we don't tell anybody, the stuff that will never be public. But I appreciate it, and I appreciate these warriors spending that time with me. One night I decided to try to drink tequila with them, and apparently if you're not a Marine, trying to drink with a Marine is a big mistake.
No, it's the Vietnam guys, man. Don't ever try to drink with Vietnam guys. They got issues. Okay. The rest of us are like relatively normal. You go drinking with Vietnam guys, you're gonna come back in a wheelchair, man. It's not gonna turn out good.
It's not gonna turn out good. Well, here's the funny part. Have I noticed in the last like 5 years, all those same guys are the ones that are all eating healthy and egg whites, and you know, they realize they ran it a little hard.
They have run it a little hard. They know it. Yeah, because they'll take, we're like, oh, look, the Vietnam dudes are here. Stand by. Shit's going to get crazy. And, but they're the best. They're the best. And let me tell you, and you and I were talking to the day, what they went through relative to what the rest of us went through, that wasn't right.
Yeah.
And so, no. So look, every cigarette they want, every drink they want,
yeah.
You need a light, bro? You need me to buy that? No, I'm good. God bless them because they're ballers. And so keep going with your story. This is awesome.
So, and real quick on Vietnam vets, because I say this when I speak, is, look, if it wasn't for these guys, PTSD didn't even have a name before them or the vet center. Right. The benefits that we get now, which we still fight for, and as survivors, we went through crap too, has all changed. Welcome homes will never be what these guys experience because Welcome Home exists because of these guys. They were the first ones to reach their arm out because they didn't get that from the vets before them when they came home. These guys are the ones that bolstered the VFWs in the last several years, the American Legions, which we're seeing them decline in membership,
right.
the Marine Corps leagues. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have the Patriot Guard because when we had the issues with East Baptist Church, who was the first ones there? Vietnam veterans. They stood up and they took off and they took upon themselves to do that. The Run for the Wall, which is going on right now, and they're midway across on all three routes, Vietnam veterans. The Vietnam Memorial in D.C., Vietnam veteran. Memorials will forever look different because of them. And I'm in awe of these guys, of all the crap they went through, and how they support each other, and how they support other vets. So, anyway, back to my story. I'm passionate about it. I take it serious.
A little bit.
Well, it's my duty. It's my legacy. It's
no.
The Gold Star Song.
Hey, trust us, man. We get it, and it's awesome. And it's awesome. So keep going. Tell your story, and then we got to talk about your trip to Vietnam too.
Sure. So we'll speed through the rest of this. So the rest of the trip is we get back, we drive to San Diego, we go to MCRD. It's the first time either one of them have been there since they graduated.
Wow.
They still metal trays out of the mess hall. they get caught. The guy who catches them figures out they're 1-9. He's all, go ahead, just take them. Then we drive to the cemetery, and then I see how a Marine cemetery visit goes. I've never seen anything like it. And it was, it's quite amazing just to be part of it. And then we go and meet my mom, my grandmother, my grandfather, my dad's younger sister, who's 10 years younger. She was 10 years when he was killed. And we all come full circle. And we just have all these great conversations. And so I keep in touch with these guys. So now I've put it to bed, and I've learned everything I'm ever going to learn, I think. And I don't need to talk about it again. Then in 2003, I have the opportunity to speak in front of the 1-9. So I speak in front of 300-plus in Las Vegas. And I'm not the keynote speaker, but as I've learned kind of over the years is when I tell my story, the room kind of collapses because I hit them out of,
right.
A different direction.
Right.
And the standing ovation that I got, and my grandparents were in the room, my kids were in the room, my mom was in the room, my stepdad was in the room, big supporter, and my other grandfather, my mom's side, because the part I didn't tell you is there was a lot of tension between those two families, and they hadn't talked ever since 1968. And there they were in the same room, and they buried the hatchet and became friends, or friendly at least. So I let that go, and then that was it. I was done. I don't have to worry about it. 2009 comes, and 1-9's having another reunion in D.C. Holy crap, I got to go. I've never been to the wall. So I go with my mom and my grandparents.
Had she been?
The first time. My mom had been once.
Okay.
Because she had traveled a lot prior to that. So I get to the wall with my grandparents and my mom, I don't know, 300-400-plus Marines, staging on the little knoll looking down, and that's how I'm exposed for the very first time to the wall, and I would not want it any other way. And so I do that, and I think it's done. That's all I need to know. And I go about my business, and I'm not really going to talk about publicly, because I never have, about being a Gold Star Son. In fact, I don't even know what a Gold Star Son is. I don't even know what Gold Star means. And my daughter goes to college in D.C., George Washington University.
Wow.
And her dorm is where? Three blocks north of the Vietnam Memorial, three blocks west of the White House.
Wow.
Right?
Home.
Amazing.
Home, right?
So I decide I'm going to go back and move her out. And before that, we're at a family party, a friend and family party. I'm telling somebody about, I'm going to go see the wall because my daughter's going to school there. They're all, I didn't know your father was killed in Vietnam. My father is missing in action. I knew this person for over 10 years, and we went camping together. We never, ever mentioned that to each other. Because that's really how it is amongst us for a long time. We both lived on an island. So I go back to D.C., and this is where we're going to get to our part here, is in 2013, I watched a film that moved me about Gold Star children, and I realized there was Gold Star children from Iraq, Afghanistan, and all the current conflicts. And my life has changed because it's no longer about me. I'm older. I've lived a life. These kids haven't. What's going to happen to them? How are they going to be supported? And so we go to the Vietnam Wall, and they're adding eight names to the wall, and there's 300 chairs set up. And I take my daughter, and she says, let's go sit down, Dad. And I look at her, and I said, that's not for us. That's for them. And she looked at me like I was crazy. What are you talking about? Your dad's on the wall. I'm all, yeah, this isn't for us. This is for those people, which actually turned out. They didn't tell you, right, because I live on an island. So I talked to an organizer for the wall because I stood at the back afterwards. I just thanked them, and they were in tears in 3 minutes. They introduced me to somebody. They were in tears in 3 minutes. They introduced me to somebody, same thing, and they said, we're going to introduce you to somebody located on the West Coast. And that person, I'll just give her a mention, Laura Ryan, who's no longer with Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, but a fantastic person. Make sure that I'm in touch with everything, everybody. I sit down at a lunch, and in front of me are two people, Tony Cordero and Terry McGregor. Terry McGregor since passed, and a giant of a man. But Tony Cordero founded a group in 92 called Sons and Daughters in Touch for Gold Star kids of Vietnam War, and I never knew they existed. And they said, you need to come to Father's Day next year, or 2015, whatever that is. And Father's Day is the day that they celebrate at the wall every 5 years. And so I go, and now I'm surrounded by hundreds of people like myself. And day one, because I'd already been very active at this point. I'm speaking everywhere. Day one, somebody says, hey, can you come and do an interview? And I'm like, all right, fine. I don't even know them. So turned out to be a documentary called They Were Our Fathers, which has been on PBS, and it's, in fact, it's on this week. And it's a very – it's about the same story I just told. And the next day, somebody's – not only are they showing the movie that inspired me on Gold Star Children, but somebody right after it is talking about a trip to Vietnam in 6 months. And I said, I don't know how I'm going to afford it, but I'm in. I'm going. And that started the trip to Vietnam. So 6 months later, I went from not knowing anybody to being completely immersed. And here I am, standing on the very ground the 19 stood, standing on the ground the 126 stood.
What was that like? This kind of this thing that had existed on books and films and different things that you had seen, now you go stand there. What, after all that you had been through, what was that like?
It was overwhelming. I mean, it's in the documentary too. You'll see it. It's powerful for each one of us. But you know, I went with an open mind. I wanted to see, what did the ground look like? What did the foliage look like? Now, I knew when they were there, there was no foliage because we killed it all.
Right.
What did it smell like? What does the dirt look like? The coolest thing, though, I realized, you know, about the dirt. You talk about the red clay dirt of Khe Sanh.
Right.
It's everywhere, right?
Right.
I mean, you can see it from the air when you're flying in.
Yep.
Except this patch of ground. This hill, the rock quarry. It's not red dirt. It's regular brown dirt. And I don't know why that stuck out, but as I'm walking down this red dirt path through coffee plantations, by the way, is what it is now. And it's the most peaceful place you've ever seen. But in my mind, I know what happened here. And Ken and Betty Rogers' film, Bravo, Uncommon Men, Uncommon Valor, really played a part. They actually supported me on this trip. They were behind me on this trip. They were there for me. My dad wasn't even attached to the 126. And I thought about their stories. And I thought about the Ghost Patrol. And I thought about the payback. And I looked around, and I actually plotted all this stuff out, in addition to everything my dad had done.
Right.
So it was quite an experience.
How is that? All right, so you go there, and you come back. That's not a small thing to digest as you essentially get to know your dad, to get to know the path that he walked on. You know his friends now. You've seen where he fought. You've seen where he died. And now you said a few minutes ago that this was no longer about me. This was about giving back. So this whole experience that you started so that you can understand takes you to a different place. So where are you with it now?
Well, I quit saying I'm at peace and I've got everything I want.
Yeah, you've said that about five times this interview. So now I know everything I want. I don't need to go back there. Good luck on closing that door, bro.
Yeah, it's never going to close.
it doesn't close, man. There's
a couple of things. So this film, both documentaries, one is called The Two Sides Project. That's going to be on air tomorrow night on KCET here in L.A., and then on PBS World nationwide Friday.
I'm sitting here thinking, like, what all these documentaries are on, and I'm thinking Memorial Day weekend. Shit, that's when we all
right.
That's when we all turn off the TV and head go someplace
right.
else because this is a rough TV week because they put all that stuff on, and so
yeah.
All right.
Well, and us as kids, we're all in different spots. So you're talking to somebody who's got to meet so many people. But there's a lot of kids that haven't met anybody. And then there's people I know that their fathers are missing in action. And we're all across the board, too. You see a lot of relationships with moms that are strained because, man, if you were an officer and an aviator, life changed for you dramatically on base. You had 30 days to get off. Officer club's gone. The housing's gone. The cars are gone. That's stuff they still haven't reconciled with. So I feel lucky, actually.
When you say I feel lucky, what does that mean?
Well, I know all these. I have so many people that have painted the picture. I have so many people that have told me about my dad. I have been able to share that story with my grandparents. My grandfather today is 95 years old. He was an ex-POW in World War II. He can tell me about World War II. And you know, they're not pleasant stories. Talking about my dad is still tough. I'm glad I can share.
Hey, Ronnie, so your dad's dad was a POW in World War II?
Yes.
And so, you know, like a lot of Vietnam veterans, those guys, their dads, their uncles, their teachers, their coaches, they were all World War II or Korean veterans. They grew up in that world, and they were going off to do their part of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you think about it. So this World War II vet at 17, my dad's 17 when he decides he wants to sign up for Marines. My dad and my grandfather and my grandmother have to go sign for him because they know he's going to do it anyway when he turns 18.
Right.
So there they are, you know, and, you know, that decision they have to think about.
Did he finish high school?
No. He was in his last year and left.
Baller.
And then he came back, and then he had signed up for another tour, was going to come back for 30 days, see his kid, marry my mom, and head back because he had a duty to his men, and he wanted to be back there. But he never made it, you know, he never made it back. And so my mom and I, you know, our lives were altered forever. So, but what do you do with that? You know, I could cry about it. I could, you know, feel sorry for myself. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah, but a lot of guys, and you know, and you, we all know, everybody's on their own journey, and there's no shame in that. If that's how you deal with it, that's how you deal with it. Some people, you know, they stuff in the closet, they lock the door, and they don't go near it, hoping that they can keep it in there. Doesn't always work, but everybody's got their own way. I mean, and even think of like your dad's dad. You know, he can talk about his experiences, but he can't talk about his son. You know,
right.
Can't talk about his baby who he lost after only having him for 18 years.
His oldest child. His oldest child, by the way.
Right. Right.
And the leader of the family.
Right.
You know, and so I don't know. You know, I don't know where I go from here. You know, I kind of put everything, you know, something interesting just on the personal note is when the Vietnam trip was going on.
Right.
I didn't let anybody else know. I was very quiet about it. My marriage was completely blown apart after almost 30 years together and 25 years together. And so I'm in Vietnam dealing with the trip and how life is going to be when I get home. And it dramatically changed. And I became the most active I'd ever been. And, you know, looking back, it was all good. It all ended up well, I think. But, you know, dealing with all of that. So, you know, now we fast forward a little bit and, you know, I have a wonderful girlfriend. Bianca's fantastic. She was married to a Marine. So yeah, that's a whole different thing right there, right? She gets it. She also went to junior high with me.
Nice.
So,
that's awesome.
So we grew up in the same, right. So we grew up in the same town. She was married to Marine. She's lived on bases. So we have this different bond. And, you know, we talked about it. Things happen for certain reasons, you know. And it all just kind of jives now. It all makes sense. So, you know, where do I go? You know, I speak. And my thing is I tell my story. But the best part of it is listening to everybody after come up to me and tell their story, you know. And the way I've been accepted by the Marines, Vietnam vets in general, but Marines are special for sure.
Oh no, you know, wait! You're not accepted. You're part of it. You just didn't know it.
Well, that is true. Yeah. And that took me a while to.
So we don't accept you. You're in, right? You're in.
Yeah.
Well, you just didn't know you had a membership card.
Yeah. No, it's. And it's funny, I'm a member of the Marine Corps League, the President Ronald Reagan Detachment 597 out of Simi Valley, which is where I used to live.
Cool.
And they brought me in, just like you said, like one of their own. I sat down once.
What do you mean, like one of their own? You are our own. We own you. We own you. Okay? So stop saying shit like that. Like one of your, we own you. You're us. We have your pink slip. You can come visit it, but you can't have the son of a bitch back because it belongs to us. You're part of us. You just didn't know it.
Well, then I'll tell you a little bit about the Marine spirit, as the Marines have told me, is so. There is a little thing about Gold Star families on how they need to behave and what they need to say and what the proper thing is to do. And you should only get your Gold Stars from the U.S. government, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
And I thought, you know what? I could do whatever I want. is my loss.
You know what I was going to say? I was going to say, I think you've got a Visa card to do whatever you want. Because I don't see anybody, given the sacrifice you've made, I think you guys make up the rules. So I'm a little bit surprised to hear you say that there's all these rules about being a Gold Star family.
Well, you think about it. I mean, everybody's at different parts, right?
Right.
You know, whatever they're in, even amongst vets, depending on what part they're in, it's easy to look at somebody else and say, you know, this is how you should be. No, you can be however you want to be. This is your journey, your story, your loss, your service. So I was also told don't take any dirt from Vietnam, you know, don't look for that. So of course in my way, When you tell me not to do something, I'm not going to do it in a subtle way. So I brought back 6 containers of dirt from Vietnam.
Nice.
They said, don't wear an American flag or anything in Vietnam, which, by the way, is false. I'll tell you this. The Vietnamese people love us. They embraced us. They understood us, and we understood them. But said, don't wear an American flag. So I didn't know any of this. I went blazing that flag all the way to my dad's site. And no one's going to stop me. I'm going to be with respect, you know, to veterans. Because I do have blowback from meeting with the enemy. I do have blowback from going to Vietnam. I do have blowback from meeting with the enemy's kids. I got blowback from going to see Ho Chi Minh in his mausoleum.
What's the blowback from who? Why?
Well, you know, everybody's got an opinion. It's you know, there's Vietnam veterans that don't want to have anything to do with Vietnam.
Right.
They're not going to buy anything made in Vietnam.
Right.
They're in their own journey. They're in their own thing. And I respect that. And I don't pass judgment, but I'll respectfully not talk about Vietnam in front of them. There's blowback from, you know, other families about our mission of meeting with the enemy and the enemy's kids. That's my decision. You know, I'm not going to represent anybody. I didn't represent a group. I represented myself. I have my own thoughts and ideas. But as you've seen, I've talked to a lot of vets and I've also gone back, and it's a healing experience. So that's my journey, and I don't pass judgment on anybody who wants to go or doesn't want to go or why they go.
All right, let me read you a couple of emails. One is from a Vietnam veteran. Jesus H. Christ, giving me goosebumps on top of goosebumps, tears running down my face. Here's another one from another Marine. Mac, wow. Way to open up the throttle this week. This interview with Ron is simply amazing. Please pass on my thanks to him for coming on and telling his story. Here's another one. Hey, Mac, what does Ron recommend relative to other Gold Star kids? Are there support groups for them now? Is there a way that people can contact him? I know the son of a Marine who was killed in Afghanistan, and he's not anywhere near Marines. I think it would be kind of cool to offer Ron's contact info to the mother when I see her, saying that Ron might be a good venue for her son when and if he ever wants to talk to somebody who's gone down that road. Awesome interview. Congratulations to Ron for what he's done. I'm sure his father is looking down on him with incredible pride at the son that he never had the privilege of knowing. Also want to say God bless him for now giving back. Well done, Semper Fidelis.
I'm going to tackle a couple of those. First of all, I just want to say I'm always in awe. I've never served a day in the boots that you guys have marched in, fought in, hiked in. And I know you keep saying, you know, I am part of this, but it just always kind of throws me back. And, you know, I do this sometimes for selfish reasons, but what I get back is so much more.
Dude, there's no way that you can have a selfish ounce in you, given what you've given. Okay? There's no way. There's no selfishness in you. You gave your dad. Your dad, you didn't give him, but he gave himself to and his service to the nation. And so whatever you get in return, there's not a selfish bit in that, man.
Well, thank
and,
you.
I just want to say this.
Yeah.
The guys who you've crossed paths with in 1-9, with Ken and Betty.
Right.
Is there any hesitation when they meet you to take you in? And there's none, right?
None. I want to talk about Ken Pipes for a minute.
Okay.
Ken Pipes, you know, who's recently passed away, and that's where we met, is at his memorial. well, back to my Marine spirit that I think I have, is I saw this film that I got the DVD for, and it was called Bravo, and I was bringing the Vietnam Memorial mobile wall to the Reagan Library, and I wanted this film. I wanted to show this film. It was important to show this film. Every, not only every Marine, but everybody should see this film. Because it's they're talking like Marines talk to other Marines. It's very rare to experience. So, I got in the car because I saw that the GI Film Festival was going on in San Diego, and I drove 3.5 hours. I had sent emails 2 days prior to Ken and Betty. They connected me with Ken and Ken Pites. And I walk in, I introduce myself, and they immediately embraced me. They took me in. They wanted to hear the story. And Ken Pites, amazing, gruff-looking guy, but so nice and tender and just a gentle, caring person that cared about me. And they kind of paraded me around and talked to everybody and introduced me, as you saw, how Ken Rogers does, right?
Right.
They treat me as a kid, as one of their kids. You got to meet Ron. You got to meet this guy. And so, yeah, not one place have I ever been, you know, pushed back off of. It's been an amazing experience.
Right. Talk about if somebody has, you know, knows of a Gold Star child that isn't a part of any of this, is there things that you would recommend?
Yes. There's an organization called TAPS.
Right.
This didn't exist when I was a kid. So last year, I took my mom to Washington, D.C. with me because we were going to premiere the film, The Two Sides Project, about our trip to Vietnam at the GI Film Festival in D.C., which we did. On a side note, we brought 5 people from the other side back to D.C. to spend the week with us watch that film.
Their sons or daughters of NVA soldiers?
Yes, correct.
Wow.
And we took them. And, you know, this is where, well, you have to see the movie because, you know, jumping here, this is where it gets touchy is, you know, I took them to go see my father and each one of us, because we have this connection that I can't even explain that happened in Vietnam. Cause when we go there, they actually show us their memorials too.
Right.
Cause we're the same. So anyway, we did that and we saw the film and they screened it. We're going to be screening that same film in Vietnam here. Later this year. And I forgot where I was going.
No, it was about TAPS. We
started. Oh, yeah, TAPS. So, we're staying in the hotel there, and, it just so happens every year on Memorial Day, TAPS has a thing, and it's geared for kids, although all conflicts, all ages, they have support for husbands, for wives, for relatives, for kids. My focus is the kids. We get there, and my mom sees about 300 kids running around with red shirts on that say TAPS. And I start explaining what the organization is to my mom. And my mom just breaks down, you know, as do I at that time, because each one of those red shirts represents somebody who was killed. And that's one of the kids. And they have this support, and they have support groups, and they do trips, and they do team building, and they have mentors, which probably something I should jump into, but
no shit, you know, man. Like, come on, get off your dead ass and get going.
I know I gotta quit lagging on my stuff here.
Exactly, you need to get in the tap.
I gotta get it moving, and it just so happened the founder Bonnie Carroll was standing right there, and I introduced my mom to Bonnie, and I don't know Bonnie, but you know. She's a Gold Star as well. She suffered loss. You can read all about that when you go to their website. And so it was just an interesting moment. And Bonnie turned to us and invited us to the dinner that night or whatever we wanted to do. But, you know, we had a full schedule. But it's that kind of family that now exists for these kids and for these, actually, even girlfriends, fiancés. My mom would have had support that she doesn't, you know, she didn't have.
Right.
So, anybody that knows a Gold Star family at all, TAPS. I'm going to drive you to TAPS every single time.
How'd your mom deal with all that?
She
did it on her own.
Yeah, my mom, she did it all on her own. She did it all on her own, you know. It's never thought, oh me, why me, why me? Never thought that way. She's humble. She's the amount of compassion she has is amazing. I mean, there's not a mean bone in her body, but I will tell you, one of the things, and it cracks me up, is I had to prove my validity as a Gold Star son before I went on this trip to Vietnam. Because yes, believe it or not, just like Stolen Valor, I don't know why, but there are people that want to claim this. You know what? Okay. You want to claim it, you can have it.
No shit, man. Here, you could have a truckload of it. They just want to claim the benefit. They don't want to claim the – they don't ever know the pain. Okay.
So I, you know, and think about how fun this is, because my mom wasn't married, so I got to use my birth certificate, but I'm not listed as next of kin because the official next of kin were my grandparents. But then my grandparents with my mom fought for 3 years to get my benefits. Actually, my mom fought. My grandparents, you know, wrote letters. I didn't know any of this, right? So this is a, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old young woman fighting to get benefits for her son. So anyway, to the story. So now I have to prove myself, and I'm like, Mom, I gotta, show proof. And my mom, again, right? No mean bone in her body, never gets mad, got angry. And she raised her voice. She doesn't raise her voice. She's all, I've been trying to, she's all, I don't have to prove myself to anybody. She's all, you're his son, basically, was the gist of the conversation. And it was just interesting to see that gut reaction from her pop out. This is also the woman who was at 17, took me, placed me next to the casket. My dad was under glass. He couldn't be exposed. It was open casket, though. Placed me next to my father because she knew that was the closest I was ever going to be to him. Sorry, just think about my mom, and you know what? That wherewithal, and that, you know, that grace, and just how, you know, how she's responded.
We need to tell your mom she needs to come on All Marine Radio. We want to talk to her.
Oh, I'll do it. We've been talking about it because, like I was, you know, this isn't my thing at the Vietnam Wall. My mom kept, this is your thing. This isn't my thing. And I would laugh the same way. And she's figured out this is her thing, too. Not only is it her thing, this is our thing. So we've been talking about speaking together because we just haven't. So, no, I'd love to have my mom on the show.
All right. Well, Ron, first of all, I can't say thank you enough, man, for coming on and doing this today. And and honestly, you're going to have to come back again, and we're going to have to talk a little bit more about the films. So the films that will be circulating on probably a number of channels around the country this week, or one is called The Two Sides Project, and the other one's called They Were Our Fathers.
Right. So The Two Sides Project, go to twosidesproject.com with the number 2. It'll list – it's on PBS stations, affiliates. Check your stations. This is about the trip. It's a one-hour version of the film to Vietnam where we meet with the other side, and really our personal journeys on who we become. They Were Our Fathers is about Father's Day in 2015 and the history of Sons and Daughters in Touch, which is about our organization, and it'll give you a great, you know, background on us. So Ron Reyes double feature this week. I never expected to be in one documentary, let alone two.
The Ron Reyes double feature. Dude, first of all, I'm glad you found your home, right, which is in our tribe. And I'm glad the journey that you've gone on took no small amount of courage to take the first steps and then continue as you try to close the door and walk away and that thing would call your name again, and to continue to go back through that door to the point of now helping other people, man. God bless you. As I said before, the PFC is looking at you with its chest puffed out, you know, and pointing at you saying, that's my kid, doing all that good shit. So congratulations. Well done. And I'm going to give you a call, and we're going to have you come back on and talk a little bit more about this.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, no problem. And I knew we were going to tangent, and really that gets us some of the stuff. But you know, I'm always available for you.
Okay.
What you're doing is fantastic. I've heard some of what you've done.
See, it's easy.
You know, you're doing great work. And then I get a vote for the for gun talk today.
Yes.
Big fan of the Glock 19.
You're a big fan of the Glock 19?
What?
Hold on. You know what? I do this. Hold on 1 second. Don't go anywhere, okay? All right. We're going to talk about the Glock 19 right now. So give me a Glock 19 comment.
I think it's a great gun. It's one of the things right out of the box where the aim is on point. I don't know. My groupings are really good at that. I like a Glock 17. I like the larger frame, but the handleability of the 19 is a great gun. So that's my little thing.
That's your thing. My guest for the last hour has been a Gold Star son from Vietnam, father a part of Delta Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, killed in action on the 30th of March in 1966 outside the wire at Khe Sanh. His name is Ronnie Reyes, PFC type, United States Marine Corps. His son is named Ronnie Reyes, a Gold Star son, and just a great legacy of his father. So, Ronnie, first of all, thanks for doing this. God bless you, man.
Thank you. You have a great show, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. There you have it. All right. The gunner has been graciously standing by. So, Mike, hold on. Don't go anywhere. Give me 30 seconds, and we continue. Are you all right? I'm late.
Yeah. What are we doing?
I'm late. I know. We're talking Glock 19.
Okay.
So
right now, or am I still holding on?
No. Well, yeah, just hold on. I just got to take a break for 30 seconds. And we'll do gun talk. So more of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.